Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
As a practical matter, as a mediator, I spend less time trying to sort out the facts of the past as opposed to what are the uncertainties and risks of the future.
Last week, Bob Creo and Monique McKay discussed how their Master Mediator Institute is working with leading neurobiologists to investigate the science of decision-making. This week, they returned to IDN to explain the practical benefits for those involved in resolving conflict. Bob and Monique tell us why they want to question the efficacy of common mediation practices and how an understanding of the brain can help parties make better decisions about their future. We start with Bob explaining how learning about how people process information and recall past events has already changed the way he practices as a mediator.
So as an example, when I was a younger mediator and a newer practitioner, and I would come to mediation and people would tell opposite stories. When I say people, I mean the participants, the disputants. I would conclude that one of them was lying through their teeth. Now, with a better understanding of psychology and human nature and memory, I understand that people recreate their own narratives and they're very sincere and memory changes. And they're much more complex.
So they're dead wrong, but they're not lying.
They're inaccurate, but they're not sincerely falsifying, although they may at times be rationalizing or have some sense. But I think Steve Colbert talks about truthiness. There's a lot of truthiness in memory. And this is an insight that we gain by studying memory.
But people believe in their lies. They create their own narratives.
It's not a lie. People believe their own perspectives. They process information differently, and we all see the same event, and we will process it differently, and we will swear by it because we will reconstruct our own memories and our own narratives.
You can wind up with two very sincere, very genuine perspectives.
Polar opposites, irreconcilable.
And either one's a lie.
And so that's very important to understand as a mediator, that you don't try to reconcile historical narratives that are ultimately inaccurate, and you move the parties beyond the idea of the right or wrong of the past to a different place of what you're going to do to move forward in the future. And so as a practical matter as a mediator, I spend less time trying to sort out the facts of the past as opposed to what are the uncertainties and risks of the future and how people can make an integrated decision based upon
all the factors in the case.
Security, rationality, emotion, values, risk analysis, closure, time, and make a decision that I used to call business decision, but I just now generally call it a decision on what to do next.
So another area might be opening statements and how a mediator typically does those. And that might also apply to an opening session negotiation. So they're very specific, focused areas of study.
How would that work?
Let me give you a good example. Is when we were trained as mediators, and I was one of the, second generation, first generation, depending on how you define it, maybe first generation of people trained in modern times here, the wisdom was received wisdom. People who were other mediators got up and said, you say this in an opening statement, and you say this, and it creates a platform or it creates an expectation. And so you need to do these things, whatever it is. As an example, people will say, well, you need to have ground rules, and you need to take notes, or you need to put things up on a flip chart, or whatever, you need to emphasize confidentiality, you need to do this. But there is no basis for any of these things from any scientific or study basis. This is just people going out and doing it, and they did it and it worked, but we never studied, and this is Dan Ariely and some of the others' points, you never study if you do the opposite. So you didn't do those things. Would you still have an effective process?
Or would it be more effective?
Or would it be more effective to do it? So I would like to see us be able to break down in many ways those conventional mediation dynamics that people just taught each other and retaught each other, and actually see if it has a scientific basis in the psychology of behavior. And many things that we're talking about.
Break down the constituent components,
yes,
and study each step and see, you know, if the plenary session, is it really effective or may not be effective?
Even beyond the detail, when I as a mediator say that compromise is not a bad word, and we come to mediation with an expectation that nobody wins and this is a process of compromise, does that have an impact or not to the participants?
And is it positive or negative? So our collaboratories are meant to be very small focus groups that would look at those specific issues, research them, and bring them back to the larger group. And then the larger community, which is MMI as a whole, can take that to the broader world of negotiators and mediators.
So as an example, people talk about, and I think you did a podcast with Ken Cloak on this,
oxytocin.
Shaking people's hands releases oxytocin, which makes people more receptive to cooperative behavior, perhaps, or feeding by eating together. And you see many mediations centers in places where they have a very structure about the food. We're going to make popcorn in the afternoon smell, and you're going to get there in the morning, and there's going to be coffee, and other mediators would bake brownies and different things to create certain trigger points. One mediator I know that would go to the office in the morning and in vents, put some aromas near the vents to soften people up. I always wondered from an ethical standpoint, that was an issue. But
yeah,
those kind of things,
yeah,
where people do certain things and they work, we believe they work, and there are certain conventions and things I do that I believe are very effective, but I don't really know. I just do it from what we often call, and I think this is maybe the key thing we're trying to develop, an understanding of what mediator sense is. Just like you have common sense, we believe that the master mediators, the experienced mediators, the successful mediators have mediator sense. And will many times be at conferences where mediators will sit around the table and talk about something, and they will come to the same conclusion independently, but we can never articulate that. And many times in a mediation, you know what to say or you know what not to say, and you do it, but I can never
articulate
why.
Yeah.
And you might have five options of what to do next, what to say next, who to talk to next, all sorts of decisions that you're making every minute as a mediator. And when you have experience and those decisions come to you naturally and they seem to be the right decisions and they do move people forward, we call that mediator sense. But we want to take that a step further at MMI and study the science behind that and see if we can become even more effective as mediators and negotiators.
And how are you going to do that? I mean, as a practical matter, what are the outputs that we'll see from this, from MMI? Are we going to see articles, books, conferences? What?
Well, we will do two immersion courses a year for the colleagues.
What's an immersion course?
It's an intensive course.
So it's not an underwater.
Hopefully not. It's basically, we started with a Wednesday evening gathering of the participants, and we do all day Thursday, all day Friday, all day Saturday, part of Sunday, and there's readings ahead of time, and there's follow-up readings, and there's communications via the internet electronically among the participants.
How many people?
We had 20 in our Duke course.
And the idea is to have a fairly small community. We're limiting participation in MMI to 66 colleagues at a time.
So that we will have the continuity and the ability to everybody to know each other's name and to interact and to form a community. in addition to enhancing the skills of those 66 people, we hope to create access and bodies of work that will ultimately end up in articles and presentations and disseminated outward.
Why 66?
There's a idea that I've seen from anthropology and other places that communities start to optimize or disintegrate after certain numbers, and
I've heard the number of 150. Yeah,
150 is the maximum. Yeah. And my own experience is that for what we do at this intense level, that 150 is too many people. And having been involved in other organizations, I think the number is less than 100. So rather than saying 100, we picked somewhat of an arbitrary number.
Two-thirds of 100.
Yes, and 66 can divide very easily by many numbers, 11, 10 different groups, and the idea of perhaps having 11 groups of six people each working on a project, interacting. So it's a somewhat arbitrary number, but I think it's a manageable number. If you have 66 people, maximum, usually if you get two-thirds of those people in a room, 40, 45 people at one time, that's about what you can fit around a U-shaped table and interact and manage and build community.
In addition to the immersion courses, do you foresee articles or books coming out of this?
We would hope, we're developing, as we were calling, collaboratories, which is a model of perhaps 3 to 6 people, scientists, professors, practitioners, to study a particular topic.
For example, we
might have a collaboratory we're considering on trust and how issues of trust and deception, and to pull together the research in that area and attempt to create some type of field work involving the mediation negotiation process on trust. And that we could come out of that with very particular talking points and guidelines. We also had an intern do a document on cross-cultural negotiation as part of her internship as a graduate student on Chinese-American negotiations. And then we have that document just coming online and being available. So we hope to study very specific things in a variety of contexts.
So breaking down the science of conflict, the dynamics of conflict, how you decide conflict and resolve it, and then also the process for mediators, the tools that may be effective to get you there.
That we call mediator sense.
Mediator sense.
Yeah.
The science of mediator sense.
And that was the
that was actually the title of our first course. It was called The Science Behind the Sense.
Behind the Sense.
And the title for the next course?
Be determined.
I think we're going to try to build the word sense in somehow, but we're not sure yet.
Okay. And if people are interested and they want to, is there a website that they can go to?
Yes, they should go to our website at www.mastermediatorinstitute.org.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.